I'd experienced it firsthand, like the shouty chefs and having things thrown at me and all that kind of stuff. And I always said to myself, if I ever make it as a head chef, I would never treat my staff the way I've been treated. Because the way that I felt at the time, I was like, I wouldn't put anyone through that, you know what I mean? Because you're not getting the best out of anyone.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Burnt Chef Journal, a hospitality-specific podcast dedicated to challenging mental health stigma and conversations designed to inspire a new, healthier, happier, and more sustainable hospitality profession. This week's guest on the Burnt Chef Journals is Philip Barantini, who I'm really, really pleased to have on. He is a fantastic individual, an incredible human being, actually, who talks about his own experiences, but he's better known for his most recent work as director of Boiling Point. And after 20 years of performing in front of the camera and working in hospitality, including having roles in things like Band of Brothers, Ned Kelly, Chernobyl, and Humans, Philip Barantini transitioned into directing in the late 2010s, making his first short film with the award-winning Seconds Out. He then followed up working with the BAFTA-nominated short film Boiling Point, starring Stephen Graham, which was then adapted into the hotly anticipated Channel 1 or BBC One drama series. Philip is refreshingly honest about his experiences working in hospitality and what he wanted to depict with Boiling Point. And I hope that you really enjoy this week's episode. It was a great opportunity to have a chat with him. We also have an episode with Hannah Walters coming up, who stars in the show as well. So if you like the content and you want to hear more, please don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, and we'll get started with this week's episode. The Burnt Chef Project is proudly sponsored by Lamb Weston, a leading provider of innovative, high-quality potato products created for chefs to help operators thrive both today and tomorrow. Working carefully with sustainably minded farmers and growers, Lamb Weston provides potato solutions for every type of kitchen, from premium British chips and fries to potato shapes, wedges, and mash. To find out more, head to lambweston.eu or search your partner in potatoes. Okay, good morning. Hello. I am joined today by the incredible director, producer, hospitality professional, Philip Barantini. Good morning, Philip.
Good morning. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good, good. It's early in the morning, right? Or early-ish. It's 9:30 for us. It's
it's
coffee's not quite kicked in yet.
Coffee's not kicked in. I've had one more, and I'll be there. But I think, up since 6 this morning doing this school run and all that, you know, being a dad.
The life behind the scenes, right? The things that go on that people don't actually, you know, it's it all adds to your day, right? It's all these things that you have to manage. And so, what's your coffee poison of choice? Is it straight black? Is it true Hospo Pro?
Straight black, yeah. I fell into that, and I'm not endorsing, it's not an advert for Nespresso, but basically it's just so easy to get up in the morning, stick a pod in, boom, done. And I just have it black, yeah. I have it black with a agave nectar instead of sugar.
Nice.
Which is like a natural syrup. I just don't know, I just like it. I feel like my teeth aren't gonna fall out. But they probably are. It's just another sugar, isn't it? Let's be honest. But that's my only. That is literally my only vice now. Coffee, and I probably drink too much of it. So people are telling me not to drink as much coffee. I probably have about 3 or 4 a day. I don't think that's just. I don't think that's too much, considering what I used to be like.
Yes. Well, I mean, we'll come on to that a little bit later. But it's. I don't know. See, in the well-being space, we're constantly getting told, don't poison your body with any toxins. You know, don't have caffeine, don't have cigarettes, etc. And it's a tricky line to follow, because I think that things are okay in moderation. And if you're using, you know, if you're drinking coffee, for example, if you're not drinking filtered coffee by the gallon and it's starting to impact your heart and give you really bad anxiety, then it's okay to drink a little bit of coffee. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's when
I get excited upon it. It's like I get excited in the morning and I'm like, oh, yeah. Even at nighttime sometimes I'm like, I can't wait for my coffee in the morning. That's where my life's at now. I get excited about
it. If it's good for you and if you think it positively about it, then it's fine, right? Yeah. There's a mate of mine's just started. He's a cacao ceremonialist.
And so he's cacao ceremonialist. Wow.
Cacao. And he swears blind. I've not tried it yet, so I've not actually taken the leap away from caffeine into cacao. But he says drinking cacao in the morning is it will change your relationship with caffeine forever.
Wow. And what is it? So just like, is it like a powdered form or what? Or
do you know what?
It's like hot chocolate, right? I think.
Yeah, well, do you know what? There's going to be people out here who are going to absolutely crucify me if I get this wrong. Because I don't know, honestly, I don't know a great deal about it. All I know is that it's made obviously from, you know, the cacao or cocoa bean, but it's a specific type of cacao that gives you like this really low, and I mean this in the right context, low high, like this energy. It's meant to open you up to be more empathic and other things as well, but it can ultimately replace caffeine without all the effects of having, you know, caffeine high and a caffeine withdrawal symptoms.
Send me the link to that one. I'll have a go. I'm always looking for new things to try out, to be honest. I went through a phase of the mushroom tea while we were filming Boiling Points. Actually, one of the actresses, Azuka Hoyle, came on set one day with this mushroom tea, and I was like, what's that? She's like, oh, it's, you know, this, blah, 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 blah. And it replaces caffeine, replaces this, and it makes you do this. So me being the way I am anyway, I was like, I Googled it and then basically ended up buying every single flavor, get delivered to my house, spent an absolute fortune, tried it once, and then it's just still in the cupboard now. So still carry on drinking coffee. So, yeah, right. So that may be what happens with that. But I'd love to try it, though.
Yeah, well, let me have a chat with him. I'll sort it out for you, see what we can get sent your way. But yeah, I think you and I are quite similar with regards to that. Like, if there's something there that we know could be good for us, and I think that, to be honest, there's a lot of people with a similar psychology, which is I'm going to try it, and you know, my plan is to drink this and change my life, and then actually perhaps the discipline or the habits creep back in. Like, we sell nootropics, so again, like mushroom capsules, right. And that are, you know, things like reishi and lion's mane and things like that. Quite beneficial. And there's a lot of studies coming out. But I think it's, what we've learned through this is that actually everyone's different. So just because reishi or lion's mane might, for example, like clear up your thought process for one person, doesn't mean that that's a blanket cover. So everyone's slightly different. And then also you need to commit to a cumulative effect. So it's like, actually, I'm going to commit to taking this for the next 4 weeks, one a day, whatever it might be. And then check in with myself and almost keep a diary and like be really proper, super disciplined. And sometimes life is busy, right? It's hard to remain disciplined like that.
Totally. Yeah, totally, totally. I mean, I do have a bit of a routine, but it's hard when you're working on set because, I mean, and I tend to try and bring that routine to set with me now. So for example, you know, I bring my own Nespresso machine to set with me, and I just make the coffees on set because I can't drink anything else really. I don't mind proper coffee from a coffee shop, but I can't drink instant coffee. Just, for some reason, it just gives me massive headaches and I get proper jittery. But like Nespresso is great, proper normal coffee straight from the beans or whatever is fine. But if someone offers me a coffee, I always sound like a bit of a diva. I'm like, excuse me, it's not instant, is it? But it's just because it just really doesn't sit well with me. But yeah.
Yeah. It's that old thing where you used to, I used to find in meetings, you'd have like an espresso or double espresso. And then before you know it, you know, the barman would be like, do you fancy another one before you go? And you'd be like, yeah, fine. And you'll leave and the fresh air will hit you and you'll get the shakes and the jitters. And you're like, oh, yeah, God, now I'm going to end up sweating hard. Like I'm going to need to try and find something to reduce this caffeine.
Yeah.
Well, we've been recording for 7 minutes, and so far, all we've done is promote coffee.
Yeah. Guys, get out there, get your coffee.
Get your coffee in you. So,
yeah,
Philip, you're obviously a fantastic director, and not just from Boiling Point. There's a multitude of things that you've been working on, and I've been fortunate enough, certainly over here in the UK, BBC are very good at giving us an opportunity to actually review your work, and it's amazing to see. But talk to me a little bit about your background, because you used to work in hospitality yourself, didn't you?
I did, yeah. I worked in hospitality for about 12 years. probably longer than 12 years actually in hospitality, but as a chef for 12 years. And I started out basically because I was working in a place in London, in a gastro pub in London as a waiter, I guess, and bar person, and just doing generally everything really. So used to do amazing food. And so my best mate, Andy, was the general manager there. I think I was just so interested about, like, basically it was an open pass, right? So it was a continuation of the bar. So the bar was on one side and then it would continue on, and on the other side would be the kitchen, the open kitchen. And there was a prep kitchen downstairs. There's two Paul Fosters. I think he was the head chef at the Ivy for a few years. And then he came to work at this pub that I was in. And I just used to watch him every day, and I'd be asking him all these questions. Now, my cousin is a chef, and my granddad was a chef. So it's kind of in the blood, and I was so passionate about food anyway. I used to love cooking. I was sort of acting at the time. I'd been acting for 20 odd years, and I wasn't making any money off it, really. My acting career went down the pan a little bit. So that's why I was working in this gastro pub to make some money, but it was sort of like a means to an end, really. And I guess I wasn't really interested in front of house stuff. It was just like there to make some money and party, basically, and have a good time, because it was a really quite a party heavy pub. And then one day the sous chef didn't turn up for work. I think he was just out all night and he never turned up. And it happened a few times before. And so Andy and Paul sort of planned this thing. So Andy came up to me, and he's my best mate, right? He came up to me and went, "Listen, we can't have you here anymore, mate. We're gonna have to let you go." I was like, "What do you mean you're gonna have to let me go?" He's like, "We just can't afford to have you here in the front of house." I was like, "Right." So I started kicking off, and I think I was like stormed out the front door. And then Paul was like, "Oi, come here." I went, "What?" He was like, "Get your whites on. You want a job in the kitchen?" And I was looked at both of them, and they both burst out laughing. I was like, "Are you messing?" And so he went, get in the kitchen with me now, and I need your help." So that's how I started in kitchens, really. And Paul was amazing. He really, really took me under his wing, and just, I was so passionate about it. And he sort of said to me, "Look, you know it all. It's all there. You know what I mean?" So I would be, he'd ask me to do things, and I sort of automatically be able to do it, because I'd sort of learned through books and whatnot, and he just gave me a job there and then, you know what I mean? And so I was kind of helping out, and every so often I'd jump on the pass with him and be like his sous, I suppose, if you like. And I absolutely loved it. And then it just sort of took off from there. And I learned so much from Paul in about the space of about 12 months, I think it was. And then I went off and worked somewhere else, and then worked my way up, really. And so I started off there, and then I went somewhere else and became commie, I think. And then I moved up the ranks as I went along, really. And yeah, just, I was, every night I'd be reading books, every night I'd be watching programs, watching Rick Stein, watching Keith Floyd, just trying to soak it all up, really. And it took over my life, literally took over my life. And, you know, obviously with the acting career was sort of going down the pan a little bit. And I thought, well, I need to cling on to this, because this is going to, because now I want to be a head chef, and I want to have my own place one day, maybe. And it was just all of these things. And I was like, right, this is where I'm focused now. But I was still acting on the side. My agent was still there, and I was still like, there was things dripping through. And you know what it's like. Yeah, I'd get a call mid-service. "Yeah, you've got an audition tomorrow." I'm like, "I can't go to the audition. I've got bloody service in the morning. I've got to be here. You know what I mean? I can't, sorry." So I think I annoyed, rubbed them up the wrong way a little bit. But yeah, I just went from there. And then I just ended up working in a load of places in London. And then I moved up to Manchester 6 years ago now, nearly seven years ago. And when I'd sort of been in the industry for so long, and I'd proper burnt out, like, and I'd, you know, I'd gone down the path of drinking, all of that. I was in a bit of a bad spot. And then I think, like, was it 8 years ago? Yeah. So I've been sober now 8 years, basically. So I went to see a therapist who's a specialist in addiction, and he's amazing. Chip Summers, his name is. I can't recommend him enough, I'm honest.
Sure. And Chip.
Yeah, Chip Summers, he's the best, honestly. He saved my life. And then I was sober a year and my mum passed away like quite suddenly. I was away in Spain, in Gibraltar, staying at my cousin's place. We'd gone over there for the weekend, me and my wife. And I got a phone call saying my mum had sort of fallen down the stairs and that was it. And you know, at that point in my life, I was sober a year. I was kind of getting myself back on track. I was still working in kitchens. And I was like, I need to be there for everyone. And I need to, everyone thought I was going to go off the rails and proper like go downhill again. But it was the complete opposite actually. And it was, you know, I wanted to do her proud because now she's watching me and she's, and I do feel like she's pushing me forward every day. And it was that sort of sparked in me that you know, for years I'd always, all that time I was working in kitchens, I was still quite bitter about not being in the entertainment industry and not getting what I wanted in that industry. And I'd wanted to direct for many, many years since I was probably like 16 or something like that. I was interested in doing that. But I never really thought I could do it because of where I was from and all that kind of stuff. But I just, after my mum passing away, it was just like, right, what's the worst that can happen here? Now let's just go for it. You know what I mean? Let's go for it and see what happens. So I made a short film, but I was going to Manchester. I still needed to make some money. And the only thing I really knew was working in kitchens, you know? So I found this agency and started working for an agency in Manchester. And that opened my eyes massively because I'm sober now. Right. And I'm working in these various different venues, like from banquet venues with serving like 800 people to then going and working in a greasy spoon where you know, it's cockroaches on the floor or whatever. And it's disgusting. And then you know, next minute you're in a Michelin star gaff. And it's like, so I seen it. I was able to sort of like, I was soaking it all in, you know what I mean? I was picking it all up and being like, wow, this is the spectrum. Like I can't quite believe, you know, cause the places I'd worked in were decent, like mostly gastro pubs, but, and sort of high end bistro type places as well. But you know, everything was fresh and everything was, you know, we prepped everything in the morning and it was all, you know, there was nothing sort of bought in. That was the sort of the level I was at, you know what I mean? But then you go to these other places and there's things in packets and you're microwaving stuff and you're like, oh my God. But then also like the sort of the mentality of those chefs working in those places as well was a big eye opener for me. I'd experienced it firsthand, like the shouty chefs and having things thrown at me and all that kind of stuff. And I always said to myself, if I ever make it as a head chef, I would never treat my staff the way I've been treated. Because the way that I felt at the time, I was like, I wouldn't put anyone through that. You know what I mean? Because you're not getting the best out of anyone. I'm not someone who sort of holds back either. Like I'm not sort of shy in terms of like saying it how it is. So there'd be times when I would probably get myself in a bit more trouble than I should have done. I stand up for myself, you know what I mean? So, but there's, but you see, right? People who, yeah. But you see people who don't, who are not, and they sort of, it damages them long term. And you can see that.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's so much there that I'd like to explore, but in terms of your experiences of working in different environments, would you say that one was better than the other? One, you know, there was a specific, perhaps the casual dining or perhaps the banqueting, or was there anything that particularly stood out from you in terms of the mentality of the individuals that worked there, perhaps in terms of their health and well-being that really shone through depending on which side of the sector you were on?
I mean, yeah, I think there was, like the places that I worked at, it was a very family-orientated places and, you know, everyone got on really well. But, you know, you sort of go to places, I mean, I'm not going to name the names of the places, but a place that generally does sort of banqueting events, let's say. And a lot of the time they bring in, they have to bring in agency staff on the nights. Yeah. But I remember it was a Christmas period and there was lots of Christmas dinners being done, you know what I mean? And I was there for a week, I think. And I just remember like the staff that would work there full time just weren't happy. Like they were just they hated each other and they hated the place. And I was just like, well, why are you working then? What is causing that? You know what I mean? And it rubbed off on everyone else and they hated us because we were agency chefs and, you know, agency chefs are getting paid half decent money and they can just come and go. And it's like, well, you know, and there was times when I was there with a mate of mine who's mixed race and there was quite a bit of racial tension, let's call it, between a few of them and him. I remember it was me and him. We'd been put in a fridge and we'd just been left in a fridge, basically, in a big walk-in fridge. And we had to divide all these desserts and sort of, and I'm just stood in this fridge and they didn't give us any coats. They didn't tell us to put a coat. We're just in our chef whites. And we're in this fridge, you know what I mean? Like 5 degrees, 4 degrees, separating all these like desserts out. And you're just like, what's going on here? And so I just said, you know, I just had to say something. And it was like, you know, well, someone's got to do it. I don't mind doing it, but like, you know, give us the proper. Yeah. I mean, just things like that. I mean, it can be very toxic, but it's not everywhere. It's like that. You know what I mean? It is still like that. And it comes from, I guess it spans from like, from the top really, and how people are treated and the respect people are given. It's all you want is to be respected and to be able to do your job and not be penalized for not getting it right. I don't know. It's a weird one. It's a whole minefield, isn't it? You know what I mean?
It's a challenging industry, right? I mean, you up until fairly recently, it's been quite heavily male dominated. You don't tend to see what goes on behind the scenes. You're almost in your like microclimate, your micro environment, where actually what to a bystander or a stranger would seem incorrect or normal or even immoral in some cases actually becomes normal because it's what you're around every day. And there's an interesting, when I studied psychology, there was an interesting study, the Stanford experiment. Have you seen it?
No.
Oh, it's amazing. So there was an experiment done in the 70s, and there's a film about it as well. And I've mentioned it, I've referenced it a few times on the podcast, but it's where a university lecturer took a group of students and he split them in half and he made a makeshift prison within the university. And he put half of them in as prisoners and then half of them in as wardens, just as a social experiment to see what would happen. And within the less than, I think it was 6 days, that experiment had to be called off for safety concerns because the things that the wardens were making the prisoners do, bearing in mind these people were familiar to each other, they knew each other, they were friends in the same class, the roles and how quickly they adjusted to that environment and their roles was harmful to the prisoners and harmful to the individuals within that experiment. So they had to call it off. So I think when we're looking at certain environments, and not just hospitality, but any environments where you have a bad culture or there's certain elements of immoral behavior or even illegal behavior, that becomes psychologically very quickly to become that's the norm, right? That's
yeah, the way yeah, things are yeah. done. It's a power, the power, isn't it? Like it's. I mean, just thinking back of some of the things that I've witnessed and stuff, it's just like, wow. I mean, I don't know whether you could, I'm sure it still goes on today, but I don't know whether you get away with it, you know, as much. You there'd be like physical abuse, but then just get back to work because that's what you've got to do in this industry. You know what I mean? You've got to, you know, that's what everyone else has gone through. So therefore you need to go through and you just shut up and just crack on with it. Because otherwise, you know, you should be lucky to be, I'm lucky enough to be working in this establishment or lucky enough to be working at this level or whatever, you know what I mean? So that's, and then it rubs off and then you do it. You start repeating the patterns, don't you?
Yeah. Well, that's the way you learn. I mean, the point of this, the point I'm looking to make is that when you've very kindly introduced us to the BBC and Hannah came to do some recording with us, one of the delegates of one of our training sessions that we run during the day, I said, look, do you fancy being interviewed by the BBC for this one show thing? He said, well, what do I know? I said, I've only been an assistant general manager for 4 years. I said, well, look, tell me what you've learned from today's session. You know, we've been in a room with us for 3 hours. We've been talking about mental health and leadership, etc. What have you learned? What my predecessor has taught me. I've only learning what he's learned or she's learned. And you know, this is an environment that I didn't sense that this was a bad environment. So I'm not saying that he's learned bad things, but he's what was the interesting thing was he said, I'm 24 years old. I've been in the industry for 4 years. And up until today, I didn't realize that there were different ways of doing things. And that was really quite amazing that you emulate, you learn from the hierarchy. And sometimes it just needs that new voice, that new perspective to come in and go, actually, hold on a second. That's not just the way that things have had to be done. And obviously they've not worked because we're in a situation now where we're incredibly resource desperate in our sector. So why don't we shake it up a bit? Really, really interesting point. Just touching upon, you say, congratulations first and foremost for being sober for 8 years now, you say?
8 years, yeah.
Mate, that takes proper dedication. Even just saying that sounds like it's stripping away. Like it takes some fucking hard ass work. That does. I wish I had the strength of character to give up alcohol. Unfortunately,
that's where it sort of started for me. And obviously, it started like I'm sure everybody starts in terms of like it's all fun and it's happening at weekends and whatnot. And then you know, suddenly I started working in hospitality and then everyone's doing it there. And it was, you know, you finish work at the end of the shift and then it's like, oh, I need a drink now. And it's like, you know, and then you sort of stay there till 5 a.m. and then you're like, oh shit, I've got to be in at 8. I've got to do the breakfast prep or whatever it is.
If you're enjoying this week's episode, consider heading over to our website and supporting our ongoing work in destigmatizing mental illness and creating a healthier, happier, and more sustainable industry by purchasing some of our branded merchandise. We have a whole range of t-shirts, hoodies, chef's jackets, well-being journals, plus a whole host more available on Worldwide Dispatch. All funds raised from sales of these items go towards free to access e-learning content, as well as providing free support systems and help for those who may be experiencing difficulty with their mental health.
That's how it sort of started for me. And then I don't know what the turning point was, but it was just got to a point where it was like every single day. And I would come in, you know, at first it wasn't just me. It was like there was a bunch of us in the kitchen and in front of house that were just doing it. And we thought we were being sneaky. We'd have the bar staff on our side and we'd basically be like, or, you know, we call it chef's coffee. Get me a chef's coffee, which would be basically like a Jack Daniels and Coke in a coffee cup. Because then after work, you'd be then getting smashed. And then you'd be, it's a vicious cycle, isn't it? You know, you'd sort of go to bed at whatever time. But I'd always just be still in work. Like we'd finish work. And I'd still be there at 5, 6 a.m, you know, with a bunch of people just sat at the bar. And then I'd keep it quiet because I was embarrassed that no one else was doing it. And I'd just be like sneaking about doing it mid service, 200 checks on the pass. And you're like, I'm just give me 2 minutes. I need a piss. And it's just, and it got to a point where it was just like, I was tired. I was exhausted. I always say this to people, like a lot of people had said to me in the past, oh, you need to chill out. You need to stop. You need to calm down a bit. And I'm like, yeah, I know I should do. Yeah, I should do. I will do. And I come out of that session and I felt like massive weight was lifted. And I just said to myself, I'm never going back there. I'm never going to do that again. But I suppose I was naive at the time because you're like, you're an addict, mate. You're not never going to go back there. Or at least, you know, you're not going to have those desires. But I knew that was it. I was on the right path. And so I remember having a bit of a spring in my step going back home that day. And I was like, this is it now. I'm on this path now. I've made that step. This is the first step in terms of admitting it, that I have a problem and I want to get help. I really want the help as opposed to needing it and someone else telling me. It was now deep, deep, deep inside me. I was like, I really want this now. And you know, And I haven't looked back, and I touch wood every day because, you know, I'm lucky and every day, you know, take each day one step at a time. But it's like You know, and don't get me wrong, I've had moments where it's, you sort of, like, I remember one particular moment which sticks out the most was I was in a hotel, been offered this acting gig in a big show, and I was out in Lithuania shooting it. I was on my own there, and I was actually writing the short of Boiling Point in the hotel room, and it must have triggered something, I think, because I looked across it, because I was in a lovely hotel room, and you know the way sometimes they leave a bottle of red wine as a gift.
What hotels are you staying in?
Well, there's some nice ones. They just have it. I mean, I suppose I don't know whether it was free. Yeah. Just, I'm guessing you have to pay for it. But so there's a bottle of red wine in. I'm just lying on the bed and I just sort of look up and I'm like, I suddenly think, oh, do you know what? No one would ever know if I just necked that bottle of wine now. And it just, I got the that like sort of burning feeling in my stomach, almost like that, right, really excited. And I'm just a bit naughty and a bit like, ooh, no one's ever going to know. Maybe I'll just have a glass of that and no one will know. But then it just, after like talk myself down, and I think I rang Chip and it was almost like it just, the wave came over and I was like, yeah, but I would know. And I'd be living with that and I'd be lying to everyone. So I just, there's often times when I get those waves, but you just got to, for me now, where I'm at in my life now, I'm in a really good place and I'm doing some amazing stuff and I'm so grateful for it. But it's still, you know, there's times when it's like special occasions like Christmas, or I hate going to certain events or parties or whatnot. I always like sort of do like a French exit or no, an Irish exit. What's it when you just get off and don't say goodbye. I don't say goodbye to people, because it gets to a point now where you're like, the beginning of the night's great. You can all communicate with each other and it's great and you're on the same level. And then it gets to a point where you're like midway through the night and you're like, people are now starting to get a bit louder. I'm starting to talk at each other and I can't really get a word in. And then it gets to the point then a bit later where you're like, there's no communication here. It's gone. So I just leave at that point, you know. And my wife's amazing. She totally understands it. And you know, I would never want her to have to what's the word I'm looking for? You know, I don't want her to have to sort of jeopardize not staying out, or, you know, if we're out with her friends or something, often we go around to her friends' houses or whatever for dinner, and I'll just say, I'm going to go, do you stay? And she'll stay the night, or she'll come home a bit later or whatever, because I don't want her to have to follow me because I don't want to be there, essentially, you know.
Isn't it, it's so funny you should mention that though, like, isn't it interesting how, say, give you this like rosy film tint of a night out, when in fact actually it probably finished 5 hours ago. Yeah. And quite frankly, you couldn't really give a shit about what people were talking about anymore, because it doesn't make any sense anyway. And you can see that in the cold light of day, and you go, check in with myself right now. Am I having fun? No. Are people twatted? No. Yes. Am I going to be really tired in the morning if I stay up for another 4 hours?
Yeah.
Yeah. Time to go home, because it's good for me as a human being and it makes me feel okay in the morning when I wake up.
And then someone goes, I've got you the drink. You're like, oh, okay, I'll stay for one more then.
Yeah. Oh, don't go home. Yeah, it's still too early. It's fine.
Yeah,
pressure comes in and you're like, no, fuck off. I'm going home.
Well, that was one of the things at the very early, when I first got sober and I was sort of in recovery. I mean, I was obviously still in recovery, but it's like started and I'd go out just because I wanted to make sure that I could do that. You know what I mean? And I was sort of testing myself, I suppose. But you sort of suddenly realize that, like, mates are not calling you anymore, because now we've got nothing in common, because the only thing we had in common was drinking, getting smashed. Or, you know, I remember one time I was working, I was on the pass, and my mate came in and he was like talking to me with his arm behind his back. And I'm like, what are you doing? And it was very weird and awkward. And he was just like walking, like really shifty. And what are you doing? Why have you got your arm behind your back? And he's like, oh, he had a glass of wine in his hand. And he's like, oh, I didn't want to, like, you know, rub it in your face. And I was like, mate, I'm working in a bloody Castro pub and I'm surrounded by it. Like, you know,
yeah.
I said, what do you think I'm going to do? Jump over the pass and bite your hand off. And so it was just weird. Like, getting, you know, the sort of the adjust really of your mates. So, because me, I was the life and soul of the party. I was the instigator. I was always the one who was like, right, let's go. You know what I mean? But suddenly it's like, oh, he's not doing it. Maybe. And it also held a mirror up to certain people as well, going, bloody hell, if Phil has done it, then maybe I need to look at myself. And that's why people distance themselves, because they weren't ready. They didn't want to, you know. There's a great saying which I use a lot. You are simply borrowing happiness from tomorrow.
Mm.
I love that.
Yeah, man, that is so true, isn't it? Because it's that forward projection. It's that, how am I going to feel tomorrow when I wake up? Which, when you are fully clean, you're fully sober, you go, yeah, do you know what? If I drink now, or if I take drugs now, I'm going to wake up tomorrow feeling absolutely fucking horrendous. But as soon as you take that first sip, or that second sip of alcohol, you get this like rosy little tint, and you go, oh, it's okay. Do you know what? Actually, it's not going to be so bad. It's not going to be a big
problem. Yeah.
Funny enough, we're doing an event on Monday to try and inspire future generations of school kids to come into hospitality.
Oh
I want to try and do something that gets kids to understand what their relationship with stress is, and actually to understand that stress isn't a bad thing, and it can either put you under duress or distress, or it can put you under eustress, and it fuels performance. So the posties just very kindly dropped off one of those. You remember those buzz wire games you used to have as a kid?
Yeah.
One side to the other.
That's a good idea, yeah.
So he's just dropped off one of those. And the idea is we're going to give them a certain amount of time, service, and we're going to say, like, right, get from one side to the other. And then we'll ask them afterwards, like, check in with yourself. How do you feel? And some people will go, yeah, that's really honed in my performance. Yeah, I was really good at it, and it felt great. And then the other side are going to be like, I didn't like that at all, and it was overwhelming. And then we'll ask them, like, you know, what is it that you do about yourself? How much do you know about your healthy hygiene? You know, perhaps when you're getting that craving, and at this young age, they tend to drink a lot of caffeine drinks. The colleges we speak to are rife with them.
Right.
And we'll say to them, like, what do you feel like you're going to need now? Is this going to be a moment of mindfulness and a 3-minute meditation, or are you going to feel like you're going to chase that high and go and drink a load of caffeine drink when you get home? And trying to get them to identify that actually, if you're going to come into this industry, we are going to flirt a lot with stress, and it is quite addictive to feel that rush, but it's about actually understanding which route to take prior to just going, well, the easy thing is just to drink alcohol to help me get to sleep, and I feel great, and I can ride that out. But actually, the long-term sustainable thing from a career perspective is understanding that actually we need to be going for exercise. So that if you get that pang of addiction, do you sit there and try and wrestle with it internally, or do you go and smash something out at the gym and or go for a really fast run and rip all that cortisol away and adrenaline away from you and clear the brain?
Yeah,
I went off on a
that's brilliant. That
there about the postie, but it's
no, that
it's,
is that that is that's a really good exercise. That I like that.
It's vital, right? In order for us to have a sustainable industry, and touch upon some of the points that, and we should talk about boiling point. I appreciate we know time is ticking, but in order for us to have a sustainable industry, we need to start the education piece a lot sooner than waiting for people to go. Yeah. Well, I'm doing this because the rest of my team do this, or because my boss has told me to do this. But in reality, actually, if we can say to them, come into the industry, fucking awesome industry, best industry in the world, but heads up, this is what is going to go through your body and your brain. And if you want to be a success and then you're in restaurant or in multiple restaurants or have a TV career or whatever you want from hospitality, then you're going to need to put in place some healthy protection mechanisms. And luckily, a lot of the younger generation are a lot more greater depth of perspective when it comes down to well-being and mental health. So hopefully now is the time that we can really start to ramp up that awareness piece.
It's brilliant. Really brilliant.
So boiling point, I mean, if you haven't yet watched this, if you're unable to get this in the country you are, reach out to us. We'll help you somehow try and watch this, because if you haven't seen it yet, you need this in your life. I'm gonna admit something to you, Phil.
Go on.
It took me. Boiling Point had been out close to I think a year or so before I actually could sit down and watch it.
Wow.
Kept getting asked by people, have you seen Boiling Point? And I was like, no, is it any good? And they were like, yeah, God, it's so real to life. It's so close, you know, everything. And I felt so stressed. I felt so anxious during it, because it was real. It was real, a real service, the film. And I went, oh, God, I talk about this day in, day out for 80 hours. Yeah, yeah. It's like, do I want to go home and sit through another 90 minutes? And do you know what? Gutted that I didn't watch it sooner because I was anxious and I was stressed during it. But because there were so many subtle nuances covered so well during that film, it gave the audience for the first time a proper look at what goes on behind the scenes and without even needing to necessarily dramatize it at all as well. So
yeah,
I feel better now that I've got that off my chest to you. No reflection on your directing skills, mate.
No, mate. I'll take it as a huge compliment, because that was some of the compliments that we got, and to be honest with you, I never really went into it going, oh, I want to give people massive anxiety. I want them to see what it's like, because it's just like, I wanted them to see what it was like, and that was it. And the fact that we, a lot of chefs, it was mixed, right? Mixed reviews with chefs, certainly with chefs, because a lot of chefs were like, oh, this is exactly what it's like, exactly what you just said there. And other chefs were like, oh, no. And I get why they're saying it, because they don't want the industry to have a bad light shone upon it and make it look like it's everyone's going through hell or whatever. But it is changing massively, thanks to, the likes of you guys as well. But it's definitely still a lot of work to be done. And I wanted to, there'd not really been anything that I'd watched in terms of drama, whether it be TV or film, that had sort of shone a light on that world, certainly in the UK, what I'd been through personally. Like I said, I worked in a lot of gastropubs and high-end bistros and stuff like that, but that also then worked in other every other spectrum of the industry in terms of, what I'd seen and witnessed because of the agency stuff. And it was almost like the agency stuff was almost just like a look into a voyeuristic look into everyone else's kitchens, and it's like, whoa, what have I been missing here? Like, this is crazy, And some of it was, look, there was one when we did the short film, which was back in 2018. We shot it in Manchester in a catering college in Manchester, and I wanted to take Stephen Graham and Jonas Armstrong, the two sort of main actors in the short, to a real kitchen. And so Ellis Barry, who was the chef consultant on the short and on the TV series, he was like, I'll tell you what, we'll go to the French in the Midland Hotel, Adam Reed's place, and we'll have some dinner and Adam will take us back and we can see the kitchen. I was like, perfect. So we get there and I'm dead excited. I'm like, Stephen's going to see the back of, into a kitchen for the first time, and it's going to be hell. It's going to be mayhem, and it's going to be, exactly what we want it to be. And so we get to the French and we sit down, and then Adam comes and brings us out, and Adam's a good mate now. And we go into the back kitchen, and it's just like completely zen, like so calm, so sort of like the opposite of what I wanted to show them. Yeah, and I'm like, oh no, this is not what our kitchen's going to be like. It's got to be. So Adam was like, because we're in a hotel, in the Midland Hotel, there's like, I think there's two or three restaurants, and this was around Christmas time back in 2018. And he goes, right, let me show you a couple of other restaurants. And because ours is like, this is sort of how I like to work now. And, he's very calm, and, everyone seemed to be really having an amazing time at work and stuff. And then we went to this other place, which was more of a steak restaurant in the hotel. And we were sort of, we went underneath the restaurant. So we were going through all of like the sort of, the corridors and stuff and all the, and there was also a banquet happening at the same time. A Christmas party was happening in one of the banqueting suites. So there's like a conveyor belt of plates getting pushed around, and all the agent, all the agency chefs. And so I was like, this is not what it's like either. This is a bit much, there's like hundreds of people working. And then, we finally got to this steak restaurant kitchen, and it was exactly, it was so busy. We were right at in the heart of it, in the thick of service. And there's people, shouting the orders and stuff like that. And it was like, everyone was working, everyone was busy, and it was loud, and it was, it was complete organized. Not, it wasn't chaos, but I imagine for Stephen, it was chaos. But, I could see that everyone was working in unison together, but it was exactly what I wanted to show him. So I'm glad we got to see that. But yeah, walking into Adam's place was just like, oh shit. I mean, it's the perfect environment, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Which is, again, like, those environments need to be celebrated as well. Like, it's
totally. Yeah.
You know, I mentioned it earlier, but Boiling Point does a great job of highlighting some of the realisms of certain environments within hospitality. I mean, no one, look, if I worked, when I was working in bars and nightclubs down in Bournemouth, if I worked in a hospitality environment that was really stale and quiet and didn't have that camaraderie or didn't have that family mentality, and I don't mean toxic family, I mean, you know, actually, like, you know, this is all good, it's a bit of banter, and banter, oh God, again, you have to be so careful with how you choose your words, because banter back in our day was actually, you know, potentially abuse.
Well, even
now, you know, but where you can have a laugh and it's psychologically safe. Yeah. But yeah, it also shows that the challenges of a fast paced environment, both the front of house and back of house, and also general management as well, who are often the forgotten souls who are dealing with managing the business operations and the profit and loss, and then also having to manage the teams and actually not necessarily always having the skill sets to do so. You showed that, and the actors and actresses showed that so subtly and beautifully. I think hats off to you, man. Like, was that always your vision? Because I know there's a lot of interviews and a lot of the actors and actresses went off sort of off script, but you know, was it always your vision to the end result?
Yeah. We, like I said, when I was writing that I was actually writing the short film when I was away in that hotel room with the bottle of wine, Red Wine Gate. And we then decided to do the feature, and it was improvised, but we basically workshopped all the dialogue during the rehearsals. So that the actors they knew what needed to be said at certain points, but if they went off script a little bit because someone else went off script, it was just about really being present in the moment and listening to each other and reacting naturally. You know what I mean? Cause yeah. And so a lot of it was, they understood the logistics and what needed to be said, and sort of some of the lingo as well. We had Tom Brown was our consultant on the feature film, who's a really good mate now and, you know, a phenomenal chef. And he was there by my side, basically saying during rehearsals, like, no, because obviously I had my experience in the kitchens and stuff like that, but I wanted to focus on the performances as a director and the way the film looked. And so Tom was integral, and same with Ellis in the TV series and in the short. He is sort of like my right-hand man. And it's like, there'd be a moment where, for example, in the TV series, like, because it wasn't shot in one take, the feature film was, so it's slightly different. But with the TV series, I'd have Ellis at the monitors with me, and we'd do an amazing take, and I'd be like, that's it, we got it, that was brilliant. And then Ellis would be like, no, he was holding the spoon the wrong way, or, you know, he didn't squeeze the squeezy bottle right. So I'm like, oh shit, okay, we've got to go again, because it's got to be right, you know. And look, they're actors at the end of the day, and they're not always going to be, you know, certain chefs are always going to be like, put a microscope over every single bit that's happening, but ultimately they're actors and they're not chefs, but we did our best to make them look like chefs, you know?
Yeah. And you know, some of those actors were chefs. Yeah. I always spoke to Hannah.
Yeah.
Christ, where are we? Friday, early this week. And she was saying, you know, she was saying that she'd obviously been in a CDP position. So it was interesting actually to have a chat with Hannah about her experiences of being in a kitchen. And she got told that she had to, without warning, she had to prepare a load of lobsters, fresh lobsters.
Oh, really?
Which no one had ever told her about, and she just sort of got left with it. But it's interesting to hear of people's experiences who have been in hospitality, pursued another career, and then in some way, shape, or form, come back into hospitality and the pressures of that. It was really, really interesting insight. And I'm so pleased that you got an opportunity with the series as well to actually go into more detail, because again, there are some quite hard hitting subjects that you've covered, I think, again, sensitively and very, very well, most notably episode 2, but I won't talk about it to ruin it for people. But I suppose the question is with based on the popularity and, you know, how well Boiling Point the film went, was your goal for Boiling Point, the series, to really start to look at more in the subtle nuances and the things that go on behind the scenes with some of these characters.
Yeah, 100%. We thought about it because with the feature, it's shot in one take, so you're very limited in terms of what you can see and show. And, you know, but the reaction to the film was, a lot of the time was like, oh man, I wish I'd have spent a bit more time with them, or I wish I knew what was going on with them. And at the time it was like, well, that is life, you know, you don't really always get to see what the outcome of certain people's situations or whatever, you know what I mean, or you never get to see that person again, or you don't see them for weeks on end. So that's just life, you know, you're all, everyone's on their own path, and you sort of cross paths now and again, and you sort of drip fed information about certain people. And that was the idea for the feature. But then when the BBC approached me and were like, we want to turn it into a series, I was like, this is like brilliant, because it's gives us opportunities now to go and see them again, these characters, I don't want to tie everything up in a neat little bow, because that's not what happens in life, as we know. So it was important to drip feed and dip the audience into that world again and pull them back out again. And that was the idea. With, we don't want to shove things down people's throats, but at the same time, it's like we do want to shine a light on society and shine a light on certain aspects of the industry, and not only the industry, it's, you know, in, you know, anyone who's going through anything really can hopefully relate to someone in that works in our kitchen or in front of house, you know, and sort of talk about it, you know, open up conversations, and, or, you know, at least, you know, I better check in on that person because I haven't spoke to them for a couple of weeks or whatever, you know what I mean? See how they're doing, or whatever it is, you know, it's a slice of life is what we've said from day one, is what we want to achieve. And so for people to be able to relate to it, and also, you know, open people's eyes to what is going on with certain people. It's okay to not be okay, but also you should check in on your mates and check in on your family, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And I think the relatability aspect is very much there. We have had a number of comments from some of our global ambassadors who says that they can see the personalities and they can see the personas, or they've experienced personas or even been some of their personas within the series, which is really cool. But more to the fact that it has started a great deal of increased level of conversation when it comes down to actually, you don't have which is where these images come from, which is the whole point. You do not know what's going on behind the scenes. That's the whole reason why that photography campaign I started in 4 years ago was designed, is because you just don't have a fucking clue. Like, whether you're serving a customer or whether you come in to do a, you know, 9, 10, 15 hour shift, whatever it might be, you don't know what's happened at home. You don't know what financial situation's like. You don't know what their physical health situation's like. You're just expected to come in and perform and do your thing. And so it's really decent to be able to have something now that not just hospitality and culinarian professionals can look at, but the general public can look at and go, God, hospitality seems like a real cool place to work. Like, it is a real cool place to work. But I didn't realize that person had been dealing with stuff before they came in, and my food didn't just magically appear on the plate, or my drink wasn't just magically invented. Perhaps I should think. And especially from the customer portrayals, you know, the customer portrayals from both the film and the series shows that customers can be dicks. Yeah. Like, they can be fucking assholes, but they can also.
And the problem is, you just have to deal with that. Like, exactly. You've got to. That's the thing I always say, that, like, in hospitality and any sort of public facing industry, it's like you don't know what's going to walk in that door, and you can't do anything about it until it's too late or whatever, you know what I mean? I mean, difficult customers or whatever. And there's that old age saying of, like, the customer's always right, isn't it? But it's, you know, it's not if it's going to be detrimental to someone's health or to someone's, you know, going forward, someone's going to be thinking about that comment, or, you know, it's tricky. Yeah. When you think about it, like, to put yourself in that position day in, day out, when you've already got your own shit going on at home, you know what I mean? And you've got to come in and put on a brave face and be smiley, be friendly to the customers. It's like some people can block it out, and other people just, they try to put on the mask, but you know, behind the mask, they're actually dying inside. It's
I think that's quite a poignant point to end on. But before we finish, I used to ask my guests this all the time, actually, but we haven't done for a while, so I'm going to hit you with it, which is, if you could travel back in time to young 17-year-old Philip, and you could give yourself a piece of advice and put a hand on your own shoulder and say, look, this is what's coming up and this is what I would do differently, what sort of things would you say to yourself?
I would probably say to myself, slow down a bit, because it's gonna be all right. You don't have to continually be chasing. If you just take a step back and just take a step to sort of look after yourself as well, and take some breaks, and yeah, because I'm still kind of guilty of that now, to be honest. Life is very busy. And, you know, I was supposed to be in London this week, and I just sort of, on Monday, I was cancelled everything. I was like, I want to be at home with the family and be, because I've been away so much, like over the last few years. It's just like, you know, I just need to be, I have to find that balance. I think that's what I would say to myself. Make sure you can find the balance in looking after yourself and taking breaks and taking a bit of time, because what will be, and it will all, you know, it's meant to happen. I think when my mum passed away, that was, my mindset was completely changed. And it was like, for me, it's like my mum is there. I was brought up Catholic. I'm not very religious in terms of, you know, going to church and stuff like that. I do believe in a higher power, I believe in energy, I believe in all of that. And I think if you're a good person and you put good energy out, then good energy will come back to you. So it's about just being a nice person. Yeah. That was a massively long-winded way of saying just chill out and look after yourself.
Mate, it was heartfelt, and it's incredibly poignant. And I mean, Christ, it opens up a load more questions, but we're at an hour mark now, and yeah, I'm sure a lot of our listeners would have more questions as well, but you know where to learn more if you haven't seen Boiling Point, the series or the film yet. And hopefully we look forward to exploring more of the characters in future series. So much looking forward to that. But mate, I thank you truly for coming on. Thank you for raising awareness for some difficult subject matters, and also sort of signposting for the Burnt Chef project as well, and letting people know that they don't have to be alone. There is support, there is education, there is there is a voice for this subject matter that is growing day by day. So I appreciate to you and the cast members for helping us with that. And
absolute pleasure. Yeah,
look forward to seeing you soon. We have an invite for you for the gala. So
brilliant.
If you're free in March of next year and you're not creating some other masterpiece, then we'd love to invite you along to that. And
I'm sure I can always make it. Yeah, let's do it. I'd love to.
Good man. Thanks ever so much. I'll speak to you soon.
Thanks, mate.